Access number 27244, Mr. John Lincoln, Real 4. Now, we're talking about your training at Connaught Barracks at Aldershot in 1958, first 6 weeks from September through to about October, autumn. And how were you assessed in the passing out phase? What's the next thing?
Well, you trained incessantly for the 6 weeks up to this wonderful thing where you were going to pass off. You had to pass off the square as a squad. And you could be back squatter, which means you'd have to go and do your basic training all over again if the inspecting officer, whoever it was, wasn't satisfied with it. So the last fortnight or so of your 6 weeks, you worked up to this. You went through all the paces, all the things you'd have to do on the passing off parade. Being non-combatant, we did not pass off using rifle drill. We had to pass off using foot drill. You wore your top pack and all your usual parts of your elements of webbing and your best uniform, highly bull boots and so on. But you didn't have to do rifle drill, you did foot drill. Now this in many instances can be more difficult because the onus is on you, the body, doing your foot drill. You don't have the rifle, you can't fox them, you can't baffle them with bull. It's you, and your arms have to be exactly right, your movements have to be exactly right, the timing has to be exactly right, and there's a set pattern of what to do. And you all build up the day of the Marbles Day, and it was the only time we ever saw the military band in national service. The military band would come down from the RAMC depot at Crookham, which was our mother corps, if you like. It would come for the pass-out parade of the current intake of national servicemen. So, in other words, you used to see this about once every 5 weeks, the military band. And they would come, and in the old barracks in Aldershot, they were barrack blocks, Victorian barrack blocks. And they had a bad habit of positioning this band between two barrack blocks. So when you were on this other side of this huge barrack square, in your squad, doing your business or marching on or marching off, you heard four bands because it would start out and the sound would bounce off the buildings and you got the most distorted, horrendous sound at the other end of the square, which didn't help your timing. So your marching would be all to pot and you'd get shot at for that and a severe bollocking. But it really wasn't your fault. It was because you couldn't hear the band properly. But that's another story. So on the day, you would march down from the barracks along to the main barrack square, which is a huge affair, and you were going to march on there, and you would have three or four other platoons on there to make up the parade, but there'd be one squad, one platoon, which would be the one who was doing the passing off. The rest of them had all done it. They were in various stages of trade training, but your squad would be the one that was passing off. And you would be under the eagle eye of the company officer. It was a Captain Harry Roper in those days, a real martinet. And he went give you the old... You were inspected by the colonel. He was trundled on. He did the inspection. You marched onto the square. Now, let me get the sequence right. You marched down the road and you turned right and marched onto the barrack square, which is a huge affair, like a large lozenge of concrete and gravel. You marched till you came to the end of the parade because the other three platoons were in position on the parade square when you got there. As you marched on, they were brought to attention. The parade was brought up to attention. And you marched on and you had to manoeuvre so that you marched and you joined at the end of the parade in your... And this is difficult to do so you don't do a concertina effect and so on. But we managed to do that properly. We were halted in the right place, advanced to face across the square at the barracks, and in the middle of the barracks between the blocks was the RAMC band and the salute and base with the colonel and all the rest of it. The parade then advanced in review order. You march out 15 paces and stop, you open order, and you're then ready for inspection. And the colonel and the company officers would come round and inspect each platoon. The passing out platoon would be rigidly inspected. I mean, you wore your small pack, and your small pack, you had a certain items which had to be absolutely immaculate and bold and so on. And if you said, I want to see in your pack, you'd have to take your pack off and demonstrate it, etc., etc. You then were singled out, your platoon was singled out in front of the rest of the parade to do a series of foot drill manoeuvres on the barrack square, ranging up and down the barrack square. And you were watched by every man and his dog. And then finally you were brought back, manoeuvred back into your position on the end of the parade and stood at ease, ready for the verdict. And the colonel would, the colonel made his announcement, oh, very well done, and I'm pleased to announce that squad 192 has been satisfactory in its foot drill manoeuvres and will now be considered to have passed into the next phase of training. And you were marched off the square with the brass band going and arms up here and stamping feet and all the rest of it. And of course everyone would swing in and it would swing down the back road from the back end of the barrack square to the naffy where everyone was falling out and would breathe a sigh of relief and go and have your char and wads. So and this parade would take about 2 hours. You'd mount parade at about 7:30 in the morning after breakfast, and by 9:30, 10 o'clock, the parade should be all over. And it didn't matter if it bucketed, if it rained elephants, snowed cannibals, it went on. None of this business, oh, we can't go out, it's raining, none of that, your body's out there. It's just unfortunate if your blanco started a run, your creases went out of your trousers. Well, that was tough. God had sent the weather and you'd have to compete with it. But that was the passing off parade. And at that point...
Now you wouldn't have relatives there for that, would you? No, that was a private ceremony then, no?
In those days, it was a private ceremony.
So what would happen after the passing out parade? You don't move out of Connaught Barracks, so you go on to the next phase.
You go on to the next phase, and what they did, they took you out of what was known as ABTU Wing, Army Basic Training Unit, these concrete blocks behind the main building, and you moved down to the other side of the hospital, which was where the barracks were, which were these barrack blocks I'm telling you about, big Victorian barrack blocks. Four barrack rooms to a block, with the ablutions and lavatories and that, up the middle staircase. And you'd be given a wing of this. And this would be your home whilst you completed your trade training. Trade training usually took anything up to 16 weeks, according to whatever it is you were being trained as. In the dental corps, you either trained as a dental technician, which was an 18-month course, but you usually didn't get on that unless you were a dental technician in Civvy Street, and all you did was the refresher course to the Army standard inside the period. Mostly, you were trained either as a dental hygienist, which was a one-year course, or a dental operating room assistant, which was a dental nurse. It was a nursing type job.
Now, which were you trained for?
I was trained as a DCA, a dental clerk assistant, an operating room assistant. And I specialised further in that I was trained in radiography. But that was another story. I had to come back and do a separate course for
that. Come back to that then. So you were going to be a dental operating room assistant. Take me through the stages of the training.
Well, the assistant is the assistant to the dental officer, has two jobs. He has to do all the documentation and maintain the records and maintain the office of the dental unit. And he has to assist the dentist at the chair side or in the operating theatre.
Let's do the documentation first. Was there much to learn there? Or
yeah.
Even for a bank clerk?
Even for a bank clerk. You had all the series of army forms, and there's about 60 different army forms that were generally used inside an orderly room. And the specialised forms to the medical service were tacked onto this. So you had to learn the general forms plus the specialised ones for your particular job in the dental oblique medical service. And you were in an office in the usual way, receiving the mail, recording the mail and all the rest of it, doing the correspondence and looking after all the military side of things in a normal military unit. Because no matter what unit you were in those days, you got all of the regulations, all of the adjustments to the regulations. You had a huge library inside your office with all the military side of things in it. you were, to all intent and purposes, a little battalion office.
So that's one side.
That's one side.
Now, the other...
There were three phases. There was then what they call models and bites. This was the phase where you actually made the first stages of dentures. You had to be taught this technique of how to make these things. You take plastic, you take casts of the person's mouth. You then construct a model in plaster of Paris from that. You then construct a bite block on that. So the first three stages of the production of a denture were done actually at the surgery, out in wherever you were. And you did a special course in training that. You also did certain...
Hang on. Now, was there much to learn about? That sounds difficult. I mean, was it difficult? What are the skills you need?
Well, you've got to be dexterous with your hands, because the dentist would take the impression. He'd hand the impression to you, the orderly. You would go through into a what they call the plaster theatre, and you would make cast models of these impressions he'd given you. You'd then, on the models, prepare what they called bite blocks, which were prepared in wax.
What's a bite? I don't quite know what a bite block is.
Well, the way every person puts the teeth together in their dentition. In other words, you can't eat unless your teeth come together properly. So to duplicate that, when you've lost your natural standing teeth, you have to create that, what they call bite, the way the jaws come together, in an artificial form. And that's what these bite blocks are for. They take the place of the standing teeth, and you then articulate the bite, the upper and lower jaw coming together anatomically, so that you get a repetition or a replica of how that person's normal teeth would work. And all this is done by the orderly. All this was prepared, it would be then taken back, the person called in again, and the orderly and the dentist together would articulate this guy so that his teeth came together in the proper fashion. They would then go to the laboratory where the technician would then produce the plastic dentures that you see in a person normally. These are all the preliminary stages of making a denture, and they have to be very accurate, otherwise the denture is no good.
So that's one thing you had to do. You said the three things.
That was that, and ancillary parts of that where you learned how to do crown preparations. This is a one single tooth where you put an artificial tooth onto the stump of an existing tooth, which was another procedure in this plaster and bite and so forth situation.
They already had that then.
Oh, yes. Why? Post-crowns, yeah, you always had those. And then, if you were a radiographer...
Hang on, was there much to do with crown preparation or...?
Yeah, I mean, in some of the units I was in...
What I mean is, for you to do, I mean, what did you have to learn?
Well, I had to learn how to take the impression that he made with, again, an impression material, with the post, which had already cut the tooth, placed the post. He'd take the impression. I'd be given the impression complete with post, and I'd put it into a plaster cast. And then on the plaster cast, I would create from a special range of stuff you had. You have all the teeth come more or less ready-made. All you have to do is the plastic, hollow plastic things, and you've got to match up the colour of his teeth with these materials, fill this hollow plastic sheath, if you like, stick it over the post until it sets, and then you can take it off, polish it, carve it, etc., take the cover off it, and then it sits on the post, and that goes into the patient, where a correspondent post has been put into his mouth, and this tooth, as it is now, is mounted on it.
And glued on.
And glued on. So that's known as post crowns. Modern day, there's all sorts of other methods used now, but that was the basic use we had in those days.
And what else were you learning?
Well, you learn, of course, you do all your anatomy and physiology, so you're...
Well, general anatomy and physiology.
Oh, yeah. You learn all of that, because, I mean, you know how the body works, apart from everything concerning the head. So that's all part of your trade training. You do anatomy and physiology and so on. Then you do Then when that had finished, you'd done your paperwork, you'd done your models and bites, you had to learn all the surgical techniques, all the instruments, all the instrument layups, the surgical techniques to be used in the chair side, if you are using general anaesthetic, ordinary anaesthetic, or if you were working in the operating theatre where the patient was induced to a general anaesthetic before you got him.
So, I mean, anaesthetics is quite a... I mean, would you do that, or would the dentist...
No, anaesthetist did that. The surgeons...
You were just learning about it.
We learned all about it because we would have to attend at a session when this was being done to somebody. So you'd have to know to resuscitate the patient, et cetera, et cetera, and assist in the layup, in the supply of the gas cylinders and all the rest of it. It's all part of a technique of what you learn how to do it. And you learn all the different instruments trays that you'd be used. I mean, I wasn't doing general surgery, so I didn't have to learn about all of them. I did the ones for the head. But it's still a specialised.
There's a lot to learn.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why they creamed off all sorts of people who had GCEs for national service. So they had you had the capability of learning the amount of work you had to learn in a short space of time.
I mean, how did you find, I mean, did you have any interest in it? I mean,
it was fascinating.
You liked it then?
Yeah, it was fascinating.
What did you like about it? I mean, because, you know, not everybody's interested in dentistry and casts and all that.
In this particular module of the training, you also had to learn how to do denture repairs. Because in those days, the dentures didn't go to a laboratory. The laboratory was a few and far between. And quite often, the smaller dental unit didn't have a dental technician. So therefore, the DCA, the dental clerk assistant, had to be capable of doing basic denture repairs. That didn't have to be sent away at the command laboratory. And then this would take time lag for the guy would be out without his dentures until he get them repaired. So he did most simple repairs actually at the dental unit in this wee laboratory that you had attached to this plaster room. So that was another aspect of the denture type module.
So, anything else about the training that you recall? You enjoyed it, you said?
I enjoyed it very much, yeah. It was very interesting. Of course, your trade qualification was in three parts. You had a third class, second class, first class, and you weren't fully trained until you'd done all three parts. Well, in national service, you usually had time enough to get up to second class trade, which was the sort of the intermediate standard. You also did ancillary training from the nursing point of view because you were in a military hospital a lot of the times. If you went to a regimental dental centre, well, that was the level you stayed at. But if you went to a hospital unit, besides normal standard first aid training you would need as a medical orderly, you also did the nursing training because you would have a ward inside the hospital where dental cases would be taken after treatment in general under general anaesthetic in the operating theatres. So you had to be trained as a general nurse. So therefore you also got, besides your duties, general duties in the hospital, like ambulance orderly. You'd work at the reception and you'd be the duty nurse that went out with the ambulance to pick up a casualty from somewhere and bring him back to the hospital. So that was a generalised form of training that you underwent. But usually you did that on the job. It was on the job training.
So what happened there? Anything happened while you were there? Do you remember? Or?
What, my first hospital?
No, sorry, you trained.
Oh, during training? Yeah. No, nothing really. It just was quite uneventful, really. We just worked at it.
So when did you finish? You'd be into 59, wouldn't it, obviously?
Early part of 59, yes.
Do you know which month?
February, March. February times here. 59, I came out of there and went to my first posting.
Now, what was your first posting?
My first posting was the Army TB Hospital. It was a TB sanatorium at a place called Hindhead in Surrey. Number 3 company, RAMC.
And what were you doing there? What happened when you got to the unit? What duties were you put on?
Well, you were inducted into the unit. I was to work in the dental department, which had a twofold job. It did normal chair side, and it also did operate in theatre, because the patients had to be dentally fit before they were, had their lungs operated on for TB, because there was a surgical hospital, you see. It was a TB sanatorium and surgical unit. The patients came from as far away as the Far East, so Gurkha soldiers were brought in and given laparotomies and resection, lung resections and so forth, for the treatment of TB.
There was still quite a bit of TB about, wasn't there?
Oh, there was then, yes. There was quite a lot of long-term residents in that place. They'd been there 12 months, 18 months, some of them, under treatment, under chemical treatment, you know.
So you were basically preparing the patients so they didn't have dental problems before they went in for surgery.
That's right.
And was there a risk of infection with TB? Was it understood and controlled and managed?
I suppose there would be, but they were all on different drugs and treatments. So really, you all got a preparatory, what they call a BCG injection, which...
BCG?
BCG, yeah.
Just anti-tuberculosis.
An anti-tuberculosis type injection, and it also gave you a resistance, some sort of resistance to it. You were screened, really. You got regular chest x-rays all the time you were there and so forth, and really, I mean, there was... It was just part of your job. I mean, it was.
Now, what do you remember of your time there? You were training on the job.
You're training all the time as National Service. Yeah, I mean, we were training on the job. Did quite a lot of nursing, 24 procedures and nursing type things. And
what sort of nursing? Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the nerve mass casualty nursing. How you do your first aid training, and you do mass casualty evacuation. Of which you were taught how to use things like a con apparatus. This was a type of basic anesthesia which you carried around in a pouch, and it was an activator with two cylinders in it, one oxygen, one nitrous oxide, and you just screwed it together at the face piece, and it would give you up to 4 minutes general anesthesia so you could set bones, that sort of thing. It was a portable anaesthetic machine. You couldn't kill anybody with it, because you only had a certain amount of stuff in it, if you see what I mean. You'd have to renew the capsules, the cylinders inside, after every because it would be finished after one patient. And you learned how to move the patient, how to transship them by ambulance, and stretcher work, and porterage, and so on and so forth. And that was all part of your general nursing training.
And anything happened in particular? You weren't there long, were you?
No, I was only there 5 months.
So that's to about July?
But end of July, yeah. July, August time.
And nothing you particularly remember about that other than a routine?
It was just a general routine. It was a nice unit, a friendly unit. It was out in the countryside. I was there all summer, and it was lovely. Hindhead in Surrey. And there were several camps out there in those days. There was the Women's Royal Army Corps School of Instruction. There was the depot and training establishment of the Queen Alexander's Royal Army Nursing Corps. They were all up and down the A3, both sides of the A3. And then away over behind that area, you had Borden training camp. And then you had the Royal Engineers areas at Liphook and so forth. So it was quite intensely populated by the Army, that area.
So what happened next then? What's your next thing?
Well, I took my second class trade when I was there, my trade exam, and passed it. And I was.
What was the nature of the exam? I mean, what did you?
Well, the exam comes in two parts. It's written and it's practical. So you do a written exam on all the different subjects that you learn the aspects of your work. And then there was a practical examination where you had to do models and bites and so on and so forth. You know, your denture type training, the laboratory type side of things. And the two go together and you're given a grading.
So what happened next?
And I was then put up for posting to... because I signed on as a regular soldier.
Now tell me about, because that's a big... big point. What made you do that after You'd only been in the army what, less than a year. I mean, six
yeah,
months.
Yeah, a year.
A year. What made you?
I enjoyed it, and the thought of going back to working in the bank didn't appeal to me at all. And I was getting on well, you know. I was Lance Corporal by this time, and I thought, you know, there's a future in this. So I made inquiries and so on and so forth. Wrote home and said to my folks, look, I really fancy this. It's a lot more. My mother didn't enjoy the fact, but that was tough. And I said, look, I'd rather stay here. And
they wanted you.
Sorry?
They wanted you.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were always recruiting. If you showed any promise, I mean, I'd completed mostly my training up to full corporal level at this stage when I'd only been in a year. I mean, that's the sort of people they wanted, you see.
What about your promotion to Lance Corporal? I mean, was that unusual or had you stood out during?
No, it was just the post became vacant. There was a Lance Corporal in charge of each dental unit. And the one that was there when I got to the unit finished his national service and went. So I was a good boy and I was the automatic choice for Lance Corporal.
Did it make much of a difference being Lance Corporal? Or
not really. Bit of pay. 8 shillings a week.
So you were now a regular. What was your next posting in?
Well, I was posted from there to number 2 Brigade Medical Company at Plymouth. To a field ambulance, it was a MASH, a Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, to join the dental team. Because the unit in the latter part of that year was destined to move to West Africa, because there was a requirement, it was an air portable brigade, and there was a requirement for its use in the in Africa. And so it was preparing when I got there to go to Africa.